Welcome to Mormon Expression Voices. My name is Katrine, and today I am happy to be here with Lindsay Goss. Hi, Lindsay.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us today.
No problem. I'm excited.
Great. You were saying that you have ancestry in the Mormon faith. Where did that begin?
So when I was looking on my dad's side, both my grandma and my grandpa on my dad's side are like 1840s. So I'm like sixth generation on both sides. And my grandma's, they came from Norway. Yeah, I think so. And it was funny because I was reading and one of my ancestors got excommunicated for, I guess they asked her if she could have a meeting at her house. And she said no. And so they excommunicated her because she, wouldn't yield to the priesthood or something anyway. And I thought that was hilarious, but I guess she got rebaptized the next day. But anyway, I thought that was kind of a funny story.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Kind of crazy. I'm like excommunicated for not, I guess she had younger kids. She's like, it's just too hard. And anyway, that was this little story in my.
Fine. You're excommunicated.
I know. It's totally funny. So yeah, so they were both in Kirkland. Right at the very beginning. I'm like, oh, started it all.
Wow. So was she in Kirkland when she was excommunicated or in Norway?
I think she's in Norway. Okay. So it was like before they came over to Kirkland. So.
And she still wanted to do that after.
I guess. Anyway, it's kind of funny.
The more I learn about how popular, I don't know what the word is, how often excommunications happened back then, it must not have been that big of a deal.
Yeah, well, like she got baptized the next day, so obviously it wasn't, I don't know. I was like, that's the most random story
ever. She probably just went to someone else. We baptized me.
Possibly. It was just kind of funny.
Okay. That's funny. And is that a grandma or...
It's on my, so my dad's mom, his aunt, ancestor. So my mom's side, I'm not really sure. I think it's probably two or three generations. It's not, I remember my great grandma, she died when I was 107, but I know she came over from Norway when she was like seven or Sweden. I think it was Norway. Yeah. So I have Norwegian on both sides of my family. So.
Nice.
Kind of fun.
So it sounds like you were raised in the faith then.
Yes. It's in my DNA, I think. But yeah, so I grew up in Salt Lake in the Sugar House area. And yeah, I grew up thinking, you know, people who drank coffee and tea were evil. Wow.
Like, and you know, should have a coffee mug.
Well, it's chai tea, but yes.
Oh, okay. It's still tea.
I know. Coffee is one of those things. I'm one of the weird people that doesn't like the smell.
Oh, no. I used to be that way. I've gotten used to it.
Have you? Okay. Yeah. I know. Because my husband's like, because he liked it, I guess, in high school. But I never liked the smell, so it's never been something I worried about. But tea, however, I discovered iced tea a few months ago. It's like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah. So. And we were both at the tea tasting they had.
Yes.
For Mormon Expression.
Yes. It was fun. But yeah, so I got a bunch of tea then, and my son like loves iced tea. And this is a chai tea. When I tasted a chai tea latte, I was like, oh my gosh, what have I been missing?
Yet. They are the greatest thing ever. Isn't that the Oprah Winfrey tea? Isn't it a chai tea at Starbucks?
I don't know.
Anyway, we're going.
But yeah,
don't know where we're going.
The Starbucks, I've had the iced tea latte like cold and warm. They're both quite delicious.
Okay.
I highly recommend them. Yeah.
All right. So we went from growing up in Sugar House to tea. Anyway, so you grew up in Sugar House.
Grew up in Sugar House. I was the good child. I was the, I don't know, like stereotypical. I was a Molly Mormon. Like if you swore around me, I was just so upset. And just, I never questioned anything. I was just so good. And I just wanted to be the best. And I loved going to church. I never missed church ever. I never ever got sick. So I never missed church until high school when I went to, after high school when I went to people's farewells. That was the only time I missed my own church, but I never actually missed church. But I think mostly I went for social reasons and I was really boy crazy. So I went to see the boys and my family went to state conference every whatever, how long it is. And I would always be so excited to see the other boys that I never got to see all the, I don't know. It was all about the boys, really. But yeah, no.
There's nothing wrong with that.
But yeah, no, I loved Young Women's, and I just really liked church, and always had fun in Young Women's. And my Sunday school class, like, we could never keep teachers. Like, they would always, like, I don't know. I'm like, I didn't think we were that bad. I was probably the boys, but they would always get new teachers. Like, nobody could handle us. I have no idea why. I guess we were a little crazy, but anyway, yeah. So I think I was a Laurel president, and my mom was the Young Women president when I was a Beehive. So that was kind of fun. Or she was my Beehive teacher, and then when I think maybe when I was a Maya maid, she was Young Women president when I was in there. So that was really fun.
Yeah. So it was important to you all through high school.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what about seminary? Were you seminary student?
Oh, yes. Not only did I go to seminary when it was my turn, but like I would ditch other classes to go to seminary. Like, what? I know.
Who does that?
Me. I know it's weird, but yeah. So I would go to seminary sometimes 3 times a day, like depending, like I'd go with some of my friends at their class, and I know it was really weird. So like if I didn't want to go to one of my classes, I ditched and we went to seminary because I loved seminary. I know. I was a little crazy, I guess.
That's funny. I'm surprised the seminary teachers let you do that.
I think about that now, and I guess they just didn't care. But, like, I went with my friend Tom a lot to his third period because I liked his teacher. I went with my other friend, like, to the seventh period. I don't know. I see if I remember what period it was because I was like, okay. Because we had really cool seminary teachers, I guess. I don't know. I was really bummed, actually, that I wasn't on seminary council. I thought for sure, because my really good friend growing up was the seminary president. He was also the prophet's grandson. So, and we were like, I wonder why. I actually didn't know he was a prophet's grandson until, like, senior in high school, and I knew him since first grade.
Huh.
So, but, yeah, I was kind of bummed. So, obviously, I was really into church.
I'm surprised they didn't say, well, she's here all day anyway.
I know, right? So anyway, so yeah, definitely a church going. In fact, I loved like camp. Like this one year, I want to tell this funny story because it's funny. So we were at Rough Out Camp, so girls camp, and my mom was the young women leader, and my sister, they called her to be the camp director. So the first word, I guess the girls had been swimming in their sports bras. This is kind of tell how
scandal.
I know. This is kind of tell you how crazy like my leaders were. But and we always played with face cards. Like it wasn't a big deal. We big game people. My whole family, we played games. So my mom was like playing with cards with my sister at the table, and we're all playing like fish or something. Anyway, so the young women, like, president comes over to tell us that she, how evil, you know, the first word was. And she's, like, kind of almost in tears. She goes, I just came over here to tell you that they were playing in their sports bras in the lake. And this is girls' camp, so there were only girls, right? And she's like, and then I come over here and find you're playing with face cards. And, like, literally almost in tears. And we were just looking at her like, you are crazy. And my mom, like, kind of puts it behind her back. Like, I'm not playing with them. Anyway, it was, so yeah, my, like, a little crazy. So I guess I did see a little bit of the craziness, but.
Yeah. By the time my daughter got to Young Women's Camp, they wouldn't even let them wear, like a cami or a little tank top under their shirts. Because. What? I know, it made no sense to me because they said that even if they were wearing the tank top, when they got into their tents, they would be tempted to take off their shirt and they would only be in a tank top, and they just couldn't have that.
Okay, like I slept in tank tops and shorts all the time.
Yeah, by the time my daughter was in it, they wouldn't even let them have a tank top under their shirts. So I was like, aren't they even more modest if they have 2 layers? But
You would think.
Heaven forbid they take off their shirt in their tent.
Oh my gosh. Even as a garment wearing, you know, I wore tank tops under everything. So that's crazy.
Yeah. It's funny. But I think it's because you were swimming in your sports bra.
Oh, yeah.
You brought it on, everyone.
Well, it was the other word. That wasn't us.
Oh, okay.
We weren't.
You just had the face card.
Yeah. We weren't the
They
truly
were
evil.
The near nudists, and you're inviting Satan into your tent.
You're right. Yeah. With our playing fish. Yes. I know. You were evil. Anyway. So
sorry.
I thought it was kind of funny.
We're having a lot of tangents in this episode.
I know.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
I think it's my fault.
I go off on tangents too, so.
Okay, so somehow you survived the face cards.
Mm-hmm.
You graduated. Did you go on to college?
No, I was kind of a late bloomer, and I didn't really know what I wanted. I actually wanted to be a massage therapist, but my parents, like, it's really expensive, and, like, they couldn't pay for it. So I just worked a ton. And that was probably the first time, because I moved out of my parents' house because my mom's mom was living there. My grandma, I guess. So she's, I didn't grow up with her being my grandma. That's a whole other, cause she's not my biological mom. So I call her my mom though, cause my mom died when I was 7.
Oh, okay.
So.
Well, that must have had a big impact on you.
Yeah. In fact, well, yeah, cause I was 7. There's 5 siblings. So we're all pretty close. My youngest brother was 4, so he doesn't really even remember her. So I remember just, it was a really hard time. Faster, I think. I don't know. Like, obviously it was really sad and it still impacts, but I was really excited when my dad got remarried. Cause then I never ever called her my stepmom. Like, at first I would call her by her name, but then, like, you know, I started calling her mom after like 6 months or something. And it was kind of me and my little brother. Cause I think we were just so starving for a mother, you know?
Yeah. How old were you when they got married?
I was 11.
Okay.
It was summer before 6th grade. So yeah. And when my parents got married, you'd think that like the ladies in the ward would be just happy that someone, and my grandparents would be happy that someone has to take care of their children's or their, you know, their daughter's kids. But my grandparents were like really mean to her. The ward member, like the ladies in the ward were really petty and just kind of mean to her. She never felt like she fit in. And I feel bad about that. Like, she finally moved once we were all out of high school, but just like how rude they were in the ward to her. Yeah. So that was kind of interesting.
And you never knew the reason why?
No, and she's different than my biological mom's very bubbly, very, I don't know, they were really good friends with her, and my mom's a little more quiet, like she's very fun, but she's more kind of quiet and reserved and not really like that opinionated, I don't know, and so I think if she was just different, and so they just, yeah, she didn't have a lot of friends in the ward, and I thought that was really, so it's kind of my first exposure to being like, okay, this word is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like mean spirited or I don't know.
And
it's kind of interesting.
How did your belief system play into the loss of your mom? Did it ever have anything reconcile with your feelings?
Yeah. I mean, it's been really, that's been the one thing that's been really hard since leaving, just because I don't know. That has been such a, you know, families are forever. And you just wanting to see her again. And I would always, in my prayers, I would always pray that she would be okay up there. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I just always, she would always be in my thoughts. Because I just, at a young age, you know, you wonder, like, I love my mom now. It's confusing because I call her mom too, but
yeah,
we have a good relationship. But, you know, you always wonder, like, oh, what would it have been like? Or like, I would think I was so weird. And then my sister would be like, well, you know, that's how mom was. I'm like, okay, like, I'm not weird, different. So it is hard growing up without a mom. And I don't know. It was,
sure.
I guess I think it was harder on my older siblings just because they knew, you know, they were there longer. I don't know. I don't know that's ever not hard, but it was,
yeah,
I don't know. You kind of bounce back a little bit when you're younger.
Yeah, I think that's natural.
So
you saved up for massage therapy school? Or?
Well, no. So I worked for the Hard Rock when it first opened. So I was part of the opening staff of the Salt Lake City Hard Rock that doesn't exist anymore.
It must have been fun, though.
It was. It was really, really fun. And I worked at Southwest. So, like, I worked tons. So I worked basically, I think there was 6 months where I only had like a half a day off here and there. So I was really kind of, I think about it now, and I think I was probably just sad and depressed after high school just because you kind of feel like you don't know where you belong. Like, I hated Relief Society, and singles wards are just like, I don't know, you know, they're just not that exciting. Mm-hmm. And so I just basically dove into work and worked a ton because I couldn't afford, because in Utah, if your parents make so much money, you can't get financial aid. So even though I wasn't living there until you're like 25 or something, you can't get financial aid regardless. It just, it goes by what your parents make. So it kind of sucks. So yeah, so I never got to do that until a few years ago. So it was kind of fun. So yeah, so then I moved to Arizona. I'm trying to think, in 2000, or I think it was 99, I think I moved to Arizona.
And why did you do that?
Well, I had been praying to know what to do, of course, and I was folding t-shirts at the Hard Rock, and of course I had a revelation. I'm like, I need to move to Arizona. So like, I called my friend up that day. I had a friend that lived there that I had known since really young. They moved there in fourth grade, and she's like, oh, I've been praying for a roommate. Because I just moved out of my mom's house. And so I was like, oh, awesome. So it was meant to be. And I literally moved 4 days later. So, like, I transferred. Southwest had a reservation center in Phoenix. And so I transferred there and literally moved. And we were in that apartment for, like, 2 weeks before she moved back. She'd never moved out of her mom's house before, and she couldn't deal with it. So I was like, oh, it was meant to be. I had this two-week window where I was supposed to move there. Her mom used to babysit me when I was younger. She was one of our nannies on Wednesdays, you know, when before my dad got remarried. And so she introduced me to my husband. She was like, oh, my nephew just got off his mission. He's like, I bet he would take you to Institute, because my friend wasn't really in the church. And she wasn't really a good friend to me. When I first moved there, she was kind of in her own, doing her own thing. And so she was, I don't know. So that's how I met my husband. So it was kind of fun.
How long had you been in Arizona when you met your husband?
Probably 2 or 3 weeks is all. And what's funny is that I had a few months before I was with my ex-boyfriend, and we got stranded in Phoenix. We went to something in Texas and we couldn't get a flight because you fly standby. And so we got stranded in Phoenix. So I called my friend and asked if we could stay at their house. And my husband had just got off his mission. He happened to be there. And so I vaguely remembered him. So I was with my ex-boyfriend, and I guess he had told his sister that night he'd met the girl he was going to marry. And I'm like, I talked to him for like a couple seconds, and my boyfriend was there. Like, so anyway,
wow.
And I'm like, interesting. So anyway, so it was all meant to be, obviously, right?
I guess so.
So anyway, so yeah, so I was there for about 3 weeks before we met. And then I think we dated for like 3 months before we got engaged and got married at 6 months.
Sounds typical.
Yeah, which, like I said, I'd never do that. And my parents really didn't know him because we lived in Arizona. And so when I told my dad, I wanted to get married in February. And he's like, oh, you should wait until June. I'm like, do you want us to get married in the temple? You know, because I'm like, being honest. And so they're like, well, that's just a really bad month for us. I'm like, okay. So I moved it up to January to kind of spite my parents.
That was your rebellion.
Yes.
To get married in the temple sooner.
Yes, exactly. Well, yeah. I did get a tattoo when I was 20. It's actually why I moved out of my parents' house, because I was afraid my dad would see it and kick me out.
Okay, we've got to talk about that. So You had never moved out of your parents' house.
No.
And you got a tattoo.
Lived in the same house for 20 years.
And what was the motivation behind the tattoo? Rebellion?
I had never done anything wrong. I really never swear. I never drank. I didn't do anything. And I was like, I wanted to do something rebellious. And so I decided to go get a tattoo. And I had a friend that was going to do it with me. But she chickened out at the last moment, of course. And so I called my sister, who had always wanted a tattoo. And she came with me. And I remember the date because it was my brother's birthday. And all, it's kind of weird. So it was October 13th. And we went and I got my tattoo. And I didn't realize that they poke a needle in your skin and then fill it with ink. Like, I didn't realize what exactly a tattoo was. And I was like, oh my gosh. It was pretty painful. But yeah, that was my... So when my dad, and it's funny, when my dad saw it, he was like, you know that's permanent, right? I'm like, yeah, you know that's permanent. He kept just saying that. I'm like, yeah, Dad, thanks. I do know.
But he didn't find out until after you moved out.
Yes, yes. No. Because when my brother and my older siblings were very naughty, well, a couple of them were bad. And so when my brother got a tattoo, he was like 17. So it was, you know, it was even before my parents made him get it, like cut it out.
What?
Yeah. So he had designed this cool tattoo on his shoulder and they made him cut it out and like go spend all this money to get it surgically removed. And then he ended up having this like thick scar. Yeah. It was crazy on the back of his shoulder. So it looked worse than the tattoo. And then obviously when he moved out, he got a big one on his back to cover it up. I'm like, that's ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah, he was amazing. He was my brother. He also had this amazing, he's an artist, and he painted this huge Bob Marley on his wall, and my parents let him do it, and I think my oldest sister, I think she probably told him who he was, and so they made him paint over it, and I was like, that's not very nice, but anyway.
Wow.
Yeah, my mom also, speaking of that brother, we found out this a couple years ago. Apparently she was watering my brother's pot plant in his room. She had no idea. She just thought he was, he thought he had a green thumb. He's like, oh, how nice, he's into plants. And so she had been watering his pot plant in his room. I had no idea he had one. Anyway, it was really funny. Sorry. Just remember that funny thing. Oh, that's how oblivious my parents were, obviously.
Well, when you're very sheltered, you don't know these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny.
So, anyway.
Where is your tattoo?
It's on my ankle.
So you moved out before they discovered it.
Yes.
You can't wear pants forever.
Exactly. And I don't even remember... I had gone to a trip to Hawaii and I got like a scratch from something on my, I think I was showing my dad this crazy scratch or something. And I'd forgotten that I had my tattoo on that leg. I'm like, crap. I was so upset when he saw it because I knew that I'd never hear the end of it. But
has he forgiven you?
I don't know. I guess so. Although I've gotten two more since then. So
does he know about those?
Yes.
Okay.
He just shakes his head and. Yeah. Rolls his eyes at me.
I'm just say, at least I don't have a pot plant.
Yes. Oh, funny, yeah.
So you marry your husband in Arizona. Do you stay there?
Wait,
you got married in the temple.
Yes, we actually got married in the Salt Lake Temple. So
okay.
We moved here. His family is LDS, but like all of his, I think about this now, you know, it's not even a question to not get married in the temple, uh-huh. But like all of his aunts and uncles are not LDS. It's only his one aunt that was my friend's mom. And then, his family are the only LDS ones in his whole family. So yeah, I got married here because I had more family to get married and my friends were here. So. But yeah, we lived in Arizona for 8 years.
What did you think your first time through the temple?
You know, I thought it was a little weird, but I didn't think much of it just because I was like, oh, this is what you do. And I thought, it was kind of weird. I did remember the part where it says that you kind of conform to your husband or, you know, and I'm like, that's kind of weird, but you just kind of shake it off, like, whatever.
Yeah.
But, and I loved the celestial room. Like, it was just so pretty and peaceful. And so I would, obviously I thought it was really weird, but everyone else is, it's just normal. So you're just like, okay. Uh-huh. So it wasn't like, I wasn't like traumatized by it, but I wasn't, it wasn't like a, okay, you know,
yeah,
this is what I have to do. So
okay,
wasn't a big deal.
Do you stay in Salt Lake or do you move back to Arizona?
So we lived in Arizona for 8 years. So we lived there and then we just came up here for our wedding.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What led you back to Utah after 8 years?
So my, well, after, oh, so we kind of had some issues here and there. I think a lot of it was because living in Arizona, it was hard. His family was a lot different than mine. My family was really close and we always had a lot of fun and played games and stuff. And to me, his family was a little bit boring, but they were really fun when we played games and stuff. But I'd always have to like force them to play games with me, you know, like, let's play a card game. So it was just, they were just different from my family. And so it was really hard. I loved his oldest sister and I liked his parents. I liked his family, but, and me and his little sister kind of, we opened a spa together. And so that's why I eventually went to aesthetic school and became an esthetician. That's kind of, so I'm like, oh, great. We're never going to be able to move because we have this spa. And then when we got rid of it, we were able to, I was like, oh, I really want to move to Utah. And my husband was like, oh, I don't know if I want to do that. And I was just like, I really need to be by my family. And so it kind of created some tension. And then after we had, my son, we moved into this house. We had our son about 5 years we waited 5 years to have our kids. And so we thought we were fine. And then, when he was about, I'm trying to think, it was about two, me and my husband were just, I don't know, we were just having issues and I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was just being away from my family. It was just kind of hard. It was a different environment, I guess. And so one night I went into the, he was up really late and I went into the front room and I was like, what are you doing? And his pants were down. I'm like, what are you doing? And I was like, what? And so he's like, oh, sorry. I went to the bathroom and I forgot to pull them up all the way. And I was like, that's ridiculous. So I like hid. I know, I like hid in the other room and like I caught him masturbating and I was just like devastated. Like literally my heart, I felt like my whole world had ended and I went into bed. I couldn't sleep that night and I just, he came to, like, I seriously was like wide awake and just disgusted by the whole thing because apparently I was very sheltered and didn't know anything. So anyway, so he came to bed and then the next day when he got home from work, I asked him point blank and he's like, no, I've never done that. I may know something. I'm like, don't lie to me. I'm not stupid. And he's like, and I'm like, James, I saw you. And he just like fell on his knees and started crying. He's like, I'm so sorry. And I was just like, so I asked him and he's like, well, I've only, you know, he told me that he didn't look at porn very much. And I was like, what? Like, I was just like, seriously, like devastated. So like for a whole year, like I cried and I like took off and I drove and I drove to the temple just in front of it, the Mesa temple. And I was just like crying. I just didn't know what to do. Like my whole world had crashed because my husband had masturbated. Wow. Like kind of ridiculous. I know.
So, but you knew, obviously knew that the church taught masturbation was sin.
Yes. Yeah. Like, and so we went to the bishop.
Did you feel like he was having an affair on you? Is that?
Oh, totally. Oh, totally. Oh, yeah. He was cheating on me. I was devastated for a year. So for a whole year, like, I just didn't know what to do. We had a pretty good sex life before that. But after, like, I just didn't, I was just disgusted. I didn't even want him to touch me because I was just literally thought it was horrible. So finally, like, I just kept praying, like, what should I do? Should I divorce him? So I finally, after a year, got this answer that we should be separated. And so I decided this, came up to Salt Lake for Christmas. I found a job and I found, a place to live. And then when I went back, I told him I wanted to be separated. And I'm like, I already have a place to stay. And he was just like, what? I brought my son up here. So he would come up every single weekend. Like, he was a really good dad. He flew up every single weekend to stay with us and to see my son. One time, I guess he felt like I was stealing my son away. And I was like, no, you can see him anytime you want. Like, I just need to be by my family.
You just have to come a couple states to do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so when I was at work one day, he actually took my son and flew him back to Arizona. And I got home. I was like freaking out. It was like the worst day of my life. I was bawling and crying. So I called my bishop in Arizona. And like, he can do something. I don't know.
Let's step back a little bit. Before the separation, did you talk to any church leaders about the issues you were having?
Yeah. Yeah. So, we talked to the bishop, and he paid for us to go to counseling, and we did it separately. And I was so upset that I was like thinking he was going to be disfellowshipped. I was really mad. I felt like he got a slap on the wrist. Like, I thought this was like the most evil thing. And I thought that he should have almost been excommunicated. Like, that's how I felt, like, which is crazy. And so he went to these counseling. He went to, I guess, a pornography addiction thing. And he came back from this little group and he's like, I'm not going back there. He's like, I can do this on my own. And later he has told me, he's like, it was ridiculous. He's like, these people had some real problems, you know, and obviously it wasn't as bad as
yeah,
I was
I've
making
heard
out to be.
That about those groups that you'll have somebody that just looked at porn a couple times with a pedophile and they're just not even related and shouldn't be grouped together.
Oh yeah. Think about it. And I've talked to other people, like, I don't think they're really porn addiction. Like, addiction is you don't even leave your house and it like affects your work and everything. Like, yeah.
So were you upset when he said he wasn't going back?
I was, but I was like, okay, I guess if he can feel like himself, you know, if he can do it himself. And so I went to counseling and would talk, and it was LDS services, you know. So I got a little bit of counseling too, but I was still just, I don't know, I just couldn't let it go, and I thought it was horrible. So I guess moving away, I just needed to get some space from the situation.
Okay. And you took your son to Arizona. I can imagine that must have been really scary.
Yeah, it was.
So you called on the bishop to save the day.
Well, yeah, I called him and I said, can you just go over there and I'm really worried and I just don't know. And for some reason, in my mind, I'm thinking, because he looks at porn, it's possible I don't even know him anymore. And so, like, I just didn't know. So he felt bad and he brought him back the next day because he knew how sad I was. So he came back and, so he still came up every weekend. And then I was kind of sneaky. I knew that, we needed to live here for 6 months in order to keep my son, because I didn't want to have to move back to Arizona to file for a divorce. So I was kind of sneaky that way. But so about after 6 months, I filed for divorce and I felt so bad. I was with my family for some reason at my sister's house and my brother was in town and we were playing games and my husband had called and I was like, I guess he got served the divorce papers. And it was like on my mom's birthday. That's what it was. It was my mom's birthday. And I'm like, I can't even listen to the messages. So my brother did. And he's like, he's really sad. And he's like, you should talk to him. I'm like, no, I can't talk to him right now. I'll wait till it dies down. Anyway, so it was just really hard for my husband because he did not want a divorce at all.
He was still hoping to reconcile.
Yeah. Mm. So once I filed for divorce.
How old is your son at this point?
I think he was 3. So I lived in this little, my friend's basement apartment, and my son and I shared a bunk bed.
Oh.
So when my husband would come over, he would share the bed with me, but the bottom bunk. But after I filed for divorce, I told him I didn't want him to stay with us anymore. And so he could only afford to come up every other week because he had to get a hotel. Mm. So he would take him on the weekends. So after a while, and in Utah, you have to go to this child care class, when you get divorced. And so, it just took him forever for our divorce to be final, because he just was putting that off and he had to be here to do it. And he lived in Arizona. I think a few months later, he asked if I could just get a bigger apartment and he would help pay for the rent so he could stay with us, so he could come up more often. So, and I was like, okay, that's fine. And I had kind of, even though we were separated and it wasn't, I guess my dad was kind of upset about it, but I was like, I would date some guys. And
your dad was upset you're getting a divorce, or
that I was dating before our divorce was final, because that's horrible.
You're having an affair.
Exactly. And I was like, whatever. So, and going out with dating when you're 30 and have a child is like the worst thing ever. And I realized, and that kind of opened my eyes to what exactly is normal, kind of a thing. And I was like, man, what was I complaining about? My husband was awesome. Like, these guys were terrible. So then when we got the apartment together, we started getting along a little bit more. When I got divorced, I got 2 more tattoos, because that was my rebellion. Apparently that's what I do when I get a tattoo when something dramatic happens in my life or something. I don't know.
What I have to ask what your tattoos were then, if you're symbolizing your divorce.
Well, I have one on my foot that's the Chinese symbol for beautiful. It was to help me remind myself I was beautiful inside and out, because I was kind of, you know, just in that bad place.
Yeah.
And then my other one was, I have it on my back. It's the Chinese symbol for river. That's my son's name.
Oh, cute.
And so, yeah. So it was for him. So, yeah.
And what's on your ankle?
It's a yellow rose, because I love yellow roses, and then U2, because it has U2 underneath it, because I'm a little obsessed with U2.
You got one of those timeless tattoos.
Exactly. Well, I was like, one of my friend's mom's like, you're going to regret that. I was like, I doubt the people with Beatles tattoos are upset about it. Come on, U2. It's been around for 30 years or more. Like, I don't think I'm going to be upset. And I'm not upset to this day, okay. So...
At least it wasn't like their faces or
no Bono's face on my back or something. Yeah, no, it just says U2. Well, it's funny because the guy who did the tattoo, he was like, I highly discourage against initials. And I'm like, U2, like, when is two an initial? I'm like, okay, weirdo. And he's like, oh, okay. I was like, okay, apparently you're not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
He was the high school dropout.
apparently. Oh, that's funny.
I'm just having a good time talking with you. Sorry. Oh,
thanks.
Okay, where were we?
Sorry, I cry when I laugh, so.
That's all right. So you divorced, got your two tattoos.
Got my 2 tattoos.
Was your husband still devastated?
Yes, he was. But, you know, it's kind of, when he came up, it seemed like kind of the reasons we got divorced were kind of not there anymore. And so we went to Christmas shopping, and he told me he wanted to date me. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I said, that's fine, but I don't want to be exclusive. And he's like, just give me a chance. And when people push me to do things, I do the opposite. Like, I don't like to be pushed to do things. So, I'm like, don't pressure luck. I'm like, I just, you know, it's fine. We can date. I just don't want to. So he still came up every weekend. It was kind of interesting because in my mind, because we were still temple married, right? Because we didn't have a temple divorce. Well, in our, I guess our divorce wasn't final. Actually, our divorce was final exactly on our 9-year anniversary, like to the day. And so, we would still sleep together, whatever. But I was still going out on dates with other guys. Like, it was
you found a loophole.
I know. It was really weird. It was weird. Cause this one date I went on, when I left, I was going out the door, he like grabbed me and then like kissed me. And I'm like, what are you doing, weirdo? I was like, he's like totally trying to make it awkward for me. It was weird.
Well, you know, I've been doing some history for my family, and one of my ancestors who was quite prominent in the church, he had 10 wives, and then his 11th why, quote unquote, he was never married, only sealed in the temple. And I guess back then, you could be sealed in the temple if you had a child together. So you didn't have to be married, but if you had a child, you could be sealed.
So they never got married, but they obviously did
they
some
had a
stuff.
Child and were sealed. Yeah.
Did some hanky panky before they,
something. So I think your reasoning actually works.
Hey, yeah. So, yeah. So even though when we found out our divorce was final, it was really hard. You know, it's like, he's the only person I'd ever had relations with, you know? And so it's hard to not cross that line, you know? And so that was kind of our, it's okay because, you know, we're still married in the temple. So even though we're law divorced, you know, and so like my parents came over one time and my dad was like, well, where does James sleep? And my mom's like, said, don't worry about it. You know, just leave her alone. You know, they're adults. They can do what they want, you know, kind of a thing. So yeah. But anyway, yeah, that was finally, like a few months later, like in April, I told him, okay, we can date exclusively. And we talked to the bishop and my ward, kind of told him stuff. And he's like, okay, well, and I told him, you know, we were thinking that we'd probably get married. And so he's like, well, I want you to be really good. So for like a whole month before once we talked to the bishop, we were really good. So it was kind of weird being teenagers and just like making out and that's all we did. Like it was just weird because, you know, especially just being married, it was an interesting.
Did your bishop know that you were having sex?
Yeah, we told him. That's why we went to the bishop because, you know, we had to have a court of love.
Okay. Okay. This is crazy. All right. So you're divorced. Mm-hmm. But you're still sealed, so you still have sex. You go to the bishop to confess your sin.
Mm-hmm.
He tells you not to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sends you to a court of love?
Yes, because I was kind of a little rebellious during my divorce stage. So I never had sex with any guys, but I had messed up a little bit. And I drank one time. I'd never drank in my whole life. But like this one night, I was like, I want to just drink one time. So I did that one time. And then I was like, okay, I'm not going to do that again. But I kind of went through this. When you get divorced, you kind of feel like the whole world is out to get you. Like you're just like, okay, you're upset with the church. You're upset with everything because it's supposed to be a temple marriage. And so I kind of had never had my rebellious stage. And so I had a hard time being good with the boys I dated. So... but I never had sex.
So that's why you were sent to court?
Yes. Because I fooled around a little bit, I guess, with these other boys.
And did the drinking come into play also while you went?
Yeah, a little bit. But so my husband actually stepped out during mine because he didn't want to hear anything. And so he's like, I don't need to, because I had told him, but he's like, I don't need to hear this. He didn't want to deal with that. So it was the most awkward, probably the worst day of my life, telling these three or four guys by myself these things I had done. And just, I mean, it just almost seemed perverted to me. Like,
did you have to go into great detail?
Yeah, they would ask like detail, like, did you do this and this? And yeah, it was very, because I never had intercourse, quote unquote, but I had done some other things, you know. And
they
so they wanted to know specifics. Yeah. And they wanted to know if the guys were, I guess they weren't really boys, they were men, but the guys were members of the church. And so the ones that were, I had to give them their names. So then
get out.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the one of them, I was like, yeah, I don't really know. But one of them, yeah. So I don't know if this guy got called in because I said that, yeah, I don't know.
They wanted you to rat people out, huh?
Yeah, totally.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I got disfellowshipped and my husband just, what? I don't know what the stages are anyway. I think I was one stage higher than him.
So you were like Eve?
Yes. And he was like- yes. Because, you know, I guess they understand when a priesthood holder, you know, having sex with his ex-wife, I guess. I guess that's not a big deal, is me. So anyway, so yeah, so I had to. So that was, like I said, that was probably the worst.
And during all this, you were planning on getting remarried, or you were just planning on dating?
Yeah, we were planning on getting remarried. Well, we talked a little bit about it. So, you know, if we were going to date again, and I had to be sure, and my husband actually didn't even want the divorce. And I was like, I just want it to go through because I need the closure. I want it to kind of end and start over, kind of a thing. So I actually asked him to marry me. Aww. In June. I know. Because I wanted him to know that I was serious and that I was really committed to it. And I think for the first time, I think when we first got married, I don't know that I ever gave him my whole heart. I don't know if that makes sense, but like, I was kind of boy crazy and I would always think of this, and I was away from my family. So you always think what if and things like that. And so it was kind of the first time. It was really good for us to go through. It made me realize what I wanted, and I was making the decision because I truly loved him, and it made our marriage better going through it. So it was amazing.
So it sounds like you didn't necessarily regret the divorce.
No, not at all. I don't think my husband wanted it for me. Like I said, it was just like that closure, getting over things. I started massage school a couple months before we got married, and that was like better than therapy. Like when you go to massage school, like you do a lot of meditating and a lot of self, because you have to be really careful about your thoughts when you're massaging people, because it's, you have to just have to be careful with your own. So it's a lot about your own self. I don't know, they talk about being responsible for your own actions. And I don't know. It's kind of a, I don't know. It was better than therapy. It was awesome. So that was really good too. But just going through the whole thing made me kind of grow up and made me realize, okay, the grass is not greener on the other side. And like I said, dating these guys that were just awful.
Yeah.
My husband, who was amazing. So
looking back, if you hadn't been taught that the masturbation was a sin, do you think you'd ever gone the direction that your marriage went?
Oh, no, not at all. Never. If I felt like I do now, it wouldn't have even been a discussion, because it would have been something we talked about. It wouldn't have been. And for me, it was more that he lied to me about it too. It was just really hard.
Yeah.
Me
and
having,
he's lying because of the shame.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. And he felt bad about it. And you know, when we had a really good discussion when we went Christmas shopping, that's kind of, he actually talked to me. Like, he never would talk to me or tell me his feelings or anything. And we had a really good discussion, and he told me, you know, that he would only do it he'd only look at porn about every 6 months. It wasn't a big deal. And he told me he'd never masturbated until he was like 27. And that's actually true.
Wow.
I know. Yes. Is that weird?
That's like a record.
I know.
When you realize that masturbation is quite normal, and in fact, those four men in your court, I'm sure they weren't innocent of it.
Oh,
how did
no.
you feel? What did you think?
I was just like, well, I still was really upset about it. I don't know, like, it was normal, but I felt like if you were married to somebody, you still wouldn't do that, I guess, because I still didn't want him to do that. And it wasn't it wasn't until recently that I really understood. I understood more, and I understood why he would do those things. But at the same time, like, well, why wouldn't you just have sex with me? You know, like, why would you do that? And now I understand it has nothing to do with anything. So he didn't tell me the whole truth then either. Like, we had a little bit of a discussion, but it was just like literally like 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had this discussion again. And I was like, what? He lied to me again? And he's like, well, could I ever have told you the truth? I'm like, no, probably not. So, but yeah, we would have gotten divorced. I mean, I still didn't know. I guess he had always looked at porn every once in a while, because guys do that. Yeah, for some reason, I was out of town one time or something. It was the first time he had ever masturbated. I'm like, that's weird that you never did that. He's like, yeah, I don't have no idea. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That makes me sad that teaching ended your marriage.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it ended up being bringing us closer.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a growing experience for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it was.
Going back to the court of love, were you angry or did you feel like that's what you deserved?
I was what I was deserved, I guess. I was a little, it was hard because you do, you feel guilty. But at the same time, I never really thought about it. My friend who was not LDS, she was like, you have to go tell some dirty old men, like all the stuff you did. I'm like, yeah, I guess I never really thought of it that way.
Isn't that funny? You just like, okay, this is what you do. You never even question it. And when somebody else says it, you're like, wait, what? Wait, what? Is that really how it is?
Yeah. And I was like, oh. And so when I went in there, I maybe that's what it made it even more awkward, but it was just an awkward, and I'm like, this is my bishop and these other old guys, and I'm having to tell them these personal sexual experiences. Like, are they getting off on this? Like, it's just, you know, like, it's just awkward. You don't even want to look up at him in the eyes, and you're like, just, I don't know, it was awful.
So they disfellowship you, yes. Which meant you couldn't take the sacrament.
I think they said I'm trying to think if I could take the sacrament or not. I think for a while I couldn't take the sacrament. No, you're right. I couldn't take the sacrament. And we couldn't go to the temple for a while. After we got married, remarried, I think it was a year before we could go to the temple again. I think we only went one time. Having kids, it's kind of hard to go to the temple. Mm-hmm. I mean, trying to find babysitters, so.
Yeah. So you remarried and your husband moved to Utah?
Yeah, so he moved up. Before we got married, like in February or March or something. So we were kind of living together. So we were living together and we were living in sin.
Okay, so even after your disfellowship, you live in sin, You remarry. What did the bishop have to say about that?
Well, once we talked to him, we were good.
Really?
Yeah. Cause we actually didn't talk to him until about a month before we got married. So okay. We were living together, and I think I just didn't go to church during that time because I didn't want to. I don't know. I went occasionally. But, so once we talked to him, he's like, well, you know, if you guys are going to get married, that's kind of why we talked to him, because we were thinking that we were going to get remarried. So he said, okay, I want you to be really good. And I was like, okay. So we were really good until we got married.
For a month.
For a month. Yep. A whole month.
So weird. I feel like sometimes bishops just kind of make it up as they go along, you know, like, and 30 days, you're good. Well, yeah. If you can last 30 days.
Well, and it's, in reality, it's kind of ridiculous because we had to wait a year anyway. So why did it matter if we were good for a whole month before we got married? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Sealed. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, we didn't get a temple divorce, so. We were still married, right? Just not in the eyes of the law, but in the eyes of the Lord. So that was our excuse.
Okay. That's funny. You get remarried. Civil ceremony. Did a bishop marry you?
No. So we decided, and then we went down to the courthouse to get our, I kind of do things on a whim. So we went to the courthouse, and they had an opening like the next day. We're like, oh, okay. So I called my mom and I said, can you come and dad be our witnesses tomorrow? And she's like, what? And she's like, really? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, well, she's like, okay, I just want to make sure that this is what you want to do. She just, that's all she said is this with? And I said, yes, I'm more sure this time than I was the first time. She said, okay. That's all I need to know.
Oh, that's a good mom.
Yeah. So she...
But I kind of get the feeling your parents kind of roll their eyes a lot at you at this point.
I'm kind of... I've always kind of beat my own drummer. I'm a little different. I always have been. But so they came the next day and we got married. And I wore this cute dress I found, and it was just by a judge, and it was like so anticlimactic and weird. It was just like, okay, just at the courthouse, you know, so it was fun.
Did you have your son with you?
No, I think he's either at daycare or I think we just had him stay at daycare.
Okay. All right. So he's back in. He's moved to Utah. When you're disfellowshipped, is there a point where they tell you, okay, your sins are forgiven, or what happens after that?
They don't really. I think we had to go talk to the bishop about once a month after we got married.
For how long?
Until for the whole year. We talked to him for, you know, for about a year.
Wow.
And in fact, well, speaking of which, I had two friends that stopped talking to me when I remarried my husband.
Because they thought you were making a mistake?
I guess. I don't know. They never talked to me. So I only found out because my really good friend went to a baby shower and they said something like, oh, you talked to Lindsay. Yeah, we're ignoring her. I was like, well, good thing you told me because I had no idea. I was going to massage school at the time, so I was really busy all the time. So I obviously didn't notice, but I was like, well, I guess they're not really good friends anyway.
Did anyone know you'd been disfellowshipped?
I don't think so. Okay. I didn't really talk to anyone about that.
That probably didn't play into it.
Yeah, I don't think I told my parents. I didn't, it's not something you want to tell anybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's
very shameful.
It is. It is very shameful. And I was even worried. I'm like, does it show on my records? Like, with my parents, are they going to know? You know, like, you don't want anyone to know those things because you don't want anyone to know you're bad.
And now you're on a podcast. Okay. Well, I think it's a happy ending that you're back with your husband.
We even got like new wedding rings. Like, we traded my diamond, and apparently at Shane Company they give you like credit back, so we got like $1,700 to trade our diamond back in. Nice. That's where we got it. And so I got two new wedding rings because we had all this money and I didn't want a diamond, so I got two new wedding rings and he got his wedding ring and I also got a fun ring. So
nice.
My mother-in-law was like, they were all upset that I wanted a new ring. I'm like, we didn't spend we had to spend like a dollar or something extra. I'm like, come on, it was a new beginning. It was just, we wanted a fresh start.
How did his family feel about getting remarried?
They were excited about it. Yeah, they were. In fact, my mother-in-law came up a few months before and she got a pedicure from me and she was like trying to press me for information. I just tried not to talk to her. I was like, eh. So, but yeah, no, I think they're excited. And it's funny because me and my husband's little sister never really got along. And I think it was a lot because we owned the spa together and we just had this bad. So when we got remarried, I called her up and I said, when I saw her, I said, I just want to start over. I'm your new sister-in-law. And I'm like, let's just start over. And so we did. And so we're fine and we have a good relationship now. So it was good all around, I guess. And I feel like I'm closer to my mother-in-law. I know I'm closer to his family now.
That's nice. That could have gone totally the other way. Like, how dare you do that to my son? And
yeah.
I'm glad that worked
out. My husband feels like my family doesn't like him, but what do you do?
And you told me that you had another child.
Yes. So a few years after my son has been asking for a new brother and sister forever. And so there's 8 years between our kids. So I just had a baby. I guess he's 10 months old. So yeah. And we had a home birth. It was beautiful. It was amazing.
Have you tattooed his name in Chinese yet on you?
No,
you know you're going to have to do it or it's just not fair.
I know. My husband was like, so what tattoo are you thinking about getting? He's like, you can't leave one of the kids out. I was like, oh, I don't know. I never really thought about that. So I actually know what I'm going to get, but I just haven't done it yet.
Okay. And you are on Mormon Expression Voices. That means somewhere along this time, things began to change.
Yes. So we had a baptism and blessing on the same day.
Because your son's baptism and your son's blessing?
Yes. Because,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Because I knew he was going to be about 3 months. I'm like, might as well do them on the same day because our kids are 8 years apart.
That's kind of sweet.
Yeah. So we did it on a Saturday and we were just going to do the baby blessing. So we did the baby blessing at the baptism.
Okay.
And this was one of the reasons. And my parents are very, you say family first, but like their callings are so important. And my mom's the Stake Relief Society president. And she told me that she wasn't sure she was going to be able to make it. And I told her like 5 or 6 weeks ahead of time because I knew the day it was going to be.
To two events, she had to do a stake calling.
Yeah. And it was something I'm like, Kate, not only was it a family event, but it was, you know, a baptism and a blessing. It was a church event, right? It was something that was, and I was so devastated because she said she had this stake event that she had to be to, and I was just so upset. And I said, well, isn't that why you have counselors? And she was like, yeah, but I feel blah, blah, blah. And so anyway, so I moved this, it up to an earlier time so she could try and make it. And she still wasn't sure if she was going to be able to make it. So I think because I was so upset about it, she did come. But she's like, I might have to leave a little early. And, but I don't know if I wouldn't have made a big stink about it if she would have actually come. So I was really upset about that. Yeah. I was really glad she came though. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I'm like, I wanted her to be there. It was really important. You know,
you're taught family first in church, and yet, well, you're not actually taught family first. You're just taught that families are so important unless there's a church calling.
Yeah. Well, I was always taught, you know, God, family, then church, you know, but you know, it's like, okay, I guess you have to magnify your calling. But like my dad, I was reading, I recently did this book on my mom's life, and I was reading
my biological mom.
Uh-huh. And I was reading her a journal, and my dad said that he had, like, it was a day after my mom had just died, and he was going to go to his scout event.
Wow.
And my mom had just died, and he said that he heard my mom, I guess, talk to him and say, your kids need you. You need to not go to this event. And so he didn't go because his dead wife told him from the grave, don't go to your calling.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh my gosh. So that's how extreme. Who would even think to go to their calling if your wife had just died? Come on, people.
You know, I almost think it's like habit. You don't even think about it. Oh, I have this calling. Got to go do that. Got to get that done. I think it's just people don't think it through.
It's kind of insane. So yeah, so we had our baby blessing and I think my husband apparently had tried to convince my son not to do it. He's like, you don't have to do this. And he just, I guess had started questioning it a little bit at that point and hadn't talked about it. My son's like, no, I want to do it, you know, and we had my father-in-law confirm him because he didn't want to do the other. And when he baptized him, he's like, I'm surprised they let me baptize him because apparently he hadn't paid tithing in a year. Like I would give him the tithing check to take and he wouldn't pay it because he didn't want to pay tithing.
So it sounds like he'd been questioning for over a year at this
point. He was upset about like the politics in Utah, about how they kind of influenced that and just the gay issue. Like he just didn't want to pay. He's like, I didn't want to give money to an organization. And I kind of thought he might not be paying it, but I thought if I don't ask, then I will still get the blessings because I'm paying it, right?
And what was he doing with the tithing money?
Well, it was just a check. So he would just rip it up, you know? So we had my father-in-law give him his confirmation. And then he gave a blessing and he's like, I tried to make the most secular blessing I possibly could. Like, and it was just short and sweet. And I was thinking, that's kind of short and sweet. I'm like, okay, whatever. It was shortly after that we just had this blessing and a baptism. And shortly after that, everything kind of crashed down.
And how did that happen?
My sister-in-law had told my husband to go to this Mormon Stories podcast online, because I don't know if you've listened to the Eldon Karchner one, but so he was in their ward growing up.
Okay.
In this little town in Arizona. And so she said, oh, you should listen to the Eldon's thing. It's really awesome. And so
did she direct him that because of Eldon or because she knew he was having problems and doubts?
You know, I'm not sure. Probably because of Eldon.
Okay.
Because she had just gotten divorced and she left the church, she wasn't going to church. I didn't know she didn't believe it anymore or anything. And her and his other sister had left the church. We had just found that out because his mom parents came up for the baptism. But I didn't think they didn't believe anymore because that's not why
it's
you
not
don't
possible.
No, that's not why you don't go to church, right? And so she was just saying, oh, you should listen to this podcast. So we watched it and it was like the first one, you're just like on edge, like, oh my gosh. And it's like an hour long. You're like, oh my gosh, I want to watch the next one. So the next night, you know, so we were just watching this awesome. My husband watched the last two without me. He's like, oh, you probably wouldn't like the last two of them because they talk about like kind of church things. And anyway, but I guess that's when my husband was like, what? People, because he talks about how maybe prayer doesn't really do anything, or, you know, just stuff like that. And my husband, I guess, had always thought this, like he never really believed in blessings. He thought they were silly. But you know, he just, it's what you do. You know, you grow up in the church and you don't talk about these things or talk about your questions. And when he told me that, I was like, what? I was like so devastated that he said that. I was like, no, I love priesthood blessings. I love when my dad gave me blessings. And I was so like, it was just, wow, that he would think that prayer was just, you know, our thoughts and working it out in our heads. And I was like, what? Like, I just didn't know what to think about that. Mm-hmm. And so that was, listening to that one was kind of the beginning of the end. 'Cause then he told me that one of his sister had told him that these people had left the church in their old ward, because she still lives down where she lives in the house that they grew up in. And they were like this family that did everything, you know, they did the morning prayer, family prayer, they did family night. They were just really good callings, just a really good Mormon family. And that they had left the church. And he's like, well, why? And they said, well, I asked her and they found some stuff about Joseph Smith and stuff. And so that was the first time I'd heard that, I guess, that Joseph Smith married a 14-year-old. I'm like, no, he didn't. What? And so I remember like crying that night. I was so devastated by that news. Like, no.
Did you believe it, or had they shown it to you and you?
I don't know that I believe it. I'm like, well, how do they know that? Mm-hmm. You know, you always want to know, like, well, anyone can say anything, because we're taught that any people always want to say bad things about the church, and it can't be true, right? Mm-hmm. So that was my journey to find out what he had told me was not true. So that's when I started looking, and James had started listening to Mormon stories after that podcast, or after we watched the Eldon thing. And so he was listening to that, and I wasn't there yet. I was just searching on the internet for anything, and then going to, and I actually, after work one night, I went to my parents' house and I said, I need to ask you guys a question. And they're like, well, my mom's like, oh no. Like, she was all like,
you're not getting divorced again.
Yeah. And so I asked him, like, do you know about this? 'Cause I'd found out about like the multiple first visions. I'm like, do you know anything about this? And I was just like so devastated. And I asked my parents, because I figured if anyone knew, my dad would know any of this stuff. And I said, no, this is stuff. And I said, this is stuff like in the Journal of Discourses. Like, I didn't look at anything anti-Mormon. And my mom's like, well, a lot of people were out to get the church in those days. I'm like, no, these are like talks from, you know, and they're like, well, give me the number and I can help you out, you know? So I was just like devastated by all the stuff I had found out, looking for it not to be true, and found out all this other stuff. And I'm like, what? So a couple days goes by. I hadn't gotten, to give my mom the number of the, whatever, the talk, so she could help me out with figuring it out. And I get a letter in the mail, because my mom writes letters. It's kind of annoying. But so I get a letter in the mail saying that she doesn't want to look at anything that isn't positive, that's negative. And I'm thinking, how is looking for the truth negative? Like, isn't the truth important? Shouldn't we know the truth? So she didn't even want to rock the boat. She just didn't. And I was so hurt that she wouldn't help me through this, because I was so devastated.
I think it's a pretty typical response, though. I think that's our gut reflex, you know, don't look at anything negative. So I don't even really blame her for that. Just,
oh, no. Well, now I understand. But at the time, I was so hurt, because I'm like, I'm trying to figure this out. And I would love her help to know these talks, you know. And it wasn't even anything negative. They were talks from General Conference. That's what I didn't understand, you know, years ago. And I think she just didn't even, you know, and I understand now because she didn't want to know. But at the time I was so devastated because that she wouldn't help me with this. And because I was crying myself to sleep every night. I mean, this was just, my heart was breaking. Like I felt so betrayed that, and then you find out about the stone in the hat, like how the Book of Mormon was translated. And it's funny because if we actually watched the, what's that show called?
South Park?
Yes, we watched the South Park and we're like, oh, it's funny how they'd get everything right, but that, like, we just didn't even think, like, why would they show that translating? But apparently they got it right. Like, we didn't even think anything of it. I was like, that's crazy. So the more I found out, the more upset I was. And I seriously would, like, cry myself to sleep every night. And so I was like, okay. I actually talked to one of my friends and she said that she had gone through this and she knew a lot and she had to just start over and start the book. Read the Book of Mormon and start all over. She ended up staying in the church. I don't know how, because I don't know how you know all this stuff and not realize. And so talking to her kind of helped. But the more I found out, and my husband and I every night would be like, what did you find out? What did you find out? And he had graduated to Mormon Expressions and I was still binge watching, listening to, you know, Mormon stories and reconciling every... It was the, okay, I need to reckon, you know, you'd listen to different things that had happened. And so you'd listen to them separately, you know, like, okay, this happened, but maybe it's because of this. And so for a while I thought, well, maybe everyone after Joseph Smith was just a fallen prophet, you know, because I'm like, there's no way Brigham, once you find out about Brigham Young, you're like, there's no way he can be a prophet. You're like, he's a horrible person, you know. Every night we just talk about it, but for the first time, I was like, okay, I'm going to devoid myself of all feeling before I pray because I want a good answer. I don't want to get an answer because I want to get an answer. I want a true answer from the Spirit. So I would kind of meditate and clear my mind. And then I would ask, like, every night, like, is the church true? Is the Book of Mormon true? And I was reading my scriptures and doing everything I could. I was going to church, and my husband had stopped going to church. And I was like, that's fine. I'm like, I still, and I'm glad we had gone through our divorce, because I think if we hadn't gone through that experience and him questioning, that may have been my key to, you know, I think it would have been a lot harder.
Or this may have been what would lead you through a divorce.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so since we'd already been through that, this is actually a growing experience, because I was like, you know, I still love you. And I think that you're still a good person. And my son would ask me on the way to church, you know, if daddy doesn't go to church, I'm like, is that bad? I'm like, it's not good or bad. I'm like, you can go to church and be a good person. You can go to church and be a bad person. You're like, you're a good person because you're a good person. You know, that was good for us because it was growing together. And yes, when he first told me he thought he was agnostic, it was just like heartbreaking. You're like, what? How do you not know if you believe in God? Because you just, his upbringing was a little more laxed in that. I mean, we were just staunch LDS and really, you know, I was that Molly Moore, you know. And so for me, it was just so devastating, the things I found out. It was just heartbreaking. So I seriously would cry myself to sleep every night, and I would pray and I would get no answer. And it would make me cry even harder because I'm like, how am I not getting an answer? So then about 5 months goes by, and the more and more you learn. And it was when I listened to the Jeremy Reynolds, listening to him about the CES letter, and he puts everything together and you're like, okay, I can't. That was when I finally accepted it. I kind of thought it probably wasn't true, but that's when I finally, you go through the 5 stages of grief, you know, and that was when I finally accepted it. And I read the whole CES letter and I was like, okay, it's not true. We went to Park City this last year with my husband's family, comes up here every other year to Park City for a family reunion because we live up here. And so we were all sitting around drinking wine. It was the weirdest thing ever. I'm like, in a million years, would you ever think this would be a scenario that we would all be sitting around drinking wine?
So you've mentioned that a few of his family members have left. Have his parents left?
No. Okay. But his family thinks his mom just goes for social reasons. I don't know. I think she may have some issues, but yeah, they like going to church. So
yeah,
that's their, they may be disappointed, but yeah, everyone is, all of his siblings are no longer in the church. And I just thought that they didn't go. I didn't know I didn't know they didn't believe.
That's actually pretty rare that all the siblings have left.
Within a few years, they all kind of left.
For the same kind of reasons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Kind of introduced it to each other and stuff. So, yeah, for me, it took me a lot longer to accept it. And then once I did, it's very freeing. Like, I think, like I said, the first thing I did, like I was nursing at the time, so I couldn't really drink. So if I wanted to try something, I would have to do it like at night and make sure there was at least, I could only have one drink and make sure there was like 8 hours between.
You didn't pump and dump?
Well, even pumping and dumping, you pump right before, it doesn't get rid of the alcohol. It stays in your system for 8 hours. So
I always thought it was kind of silly.
Yeah.
Pump and dump. My friends always did that. And I was like, why bother? You're wasting good stuff there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so I would pump right before just so I could have a bottle and then I'd be empty. But then, yeah, then 8 hours later, oh my gosh. So it's like, it was not even worth drinking. Yeah. So, but then I found iced tea and I was like, I'm like, where has this been all my life?
Yeah.
Cause I was a huge Mountain Dew drinker and why that was okay. Like I drank so much Mountain Dew growing up. But then iced tea was terrible.
Yeah. Do your parents know how you feel now?
Yes. Yeah, so I decided to dye my hair blue because I always had like blue extensions. I actually had a lady in my ward with pink hair, so I could have gone to church with blue hair. Like we had a very liberal ward. It would have been totally fine. But for some reason, like I kind of had my closure or whatever. So I stopped going to church like right after I dyed my hair blue. So my mom called me and asked if I would speak at the Father's Day about my dad in her ward. I'm like, yeah, I couldn't do that. And I'm like, well, you know, my hair's blue, right? Because I thought my dad would have told her because he was like shaking his head at that, you know? And, she's like, oh, well, let me call. I just don't. And I was like, well, yeah, my ward doesn't care. So obviously then I called her like a couple days before. She's like, yeah, they found somebody else. So you didn't need, I was like, okay, but you just didn't want a crazy blue haired lady. So, but they didn't think anything of that, which is funny. Cause like I said, my family, like my friends, that's just what I do, I guess, is dye my hair blue. Decided to write them a letter finally. Cause I wanted to figure out exactly what I believed before I did this. And I was too scared to tell them face to face. And so I wrote a letter and I was like, well, that's kind of how my mom communicates. So I wrote a letter telling them that I didn't believe in the church anymore. I know a lot of people will just kind of hide it. Like I have a sister-in-law that kind of hides it. And she basically told me that she doesn't believe, but they don't say anything because they just don't want to rock the boat. And to me, I feel that's very deceptive. I'm a very honest person and I can't. Every time I would go over to my parents' house, I'd be worried that they would ask my son about church because my son would just tell, he was so excited when we stopped going. He was like, we don't go to church anymore. And he would just tell everybody. And, so I was worried that he would say something and it was too stressful. So I was like, I just need to tell him now that I know exactly. So I wrote him a letter and I thought my dad would get it like the next day. And so I totally forgot that we were going over there for the 24th of July. And so he got it the day before.
Good timing.
Yeah, wonderful. And he had me come over and he's like, I want you to come over and talk to me. So it is so hot in their house. And my son, my baby, he just doesn't like to be, I don't know, he doesn't like to be hot. So for an hour we are upstairs and my dad was asking me all these questions. Like, he wanted to know everything. And I was like, Dad, I just this and this. And I would tell him and he'd be like, well, this, and he would just have an answer for everything. So for 2 hours, we were just basically hashing it out. It was like the worst 2 hours of my life.
Was it argumentative?
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, it made me realize how brainwashed we were. And it was so almost sad talking to him because of his responses. Like I said, Dad, the Book of Abraham, like they know it's not translated correctly. I said, they have a papyri and it's totally wrong. The experts. And my dad's like, well, it doesn't matter what they say. The Lord translated it so that it's right. So languages can change over time. And I'm thinking, really? So the 100 experts are wrong? And I'm like, wow, like that's blatant. I'm like, I'm thinking, man, the church had a better response than that. Like, you know, and just wow. And so I was just like, Dad, for like 4 times, I was like, can we just agree to disagree, please? Can we just agree to disagree? I said, Dad, I heard of people like they fasting to not be gay for like a week. He's like, well, I think that's a good thing to do. And I was like, okay, I'm leaving. And I was like, I can't listen to this bigotry. And I stood up and he's like, no, sit down. And I was just, it was just so hard. And finally, River, my son was just like, we need to go. And he's like, I want to go. And I was like, yep, I want to go too. I was like, I have to go. And I saw my mom on the way out and she just kind of gave me, she just ignored me. And like the next day she told it, we went over and it was so awkward. And my husband's like, I don't even want to go. I'm like, no, we need to go because I don't want him to think that things are going to change just because we don't believe in the church anymore. But my mom was totally awkward, totally ignored me. And I kept asking her questions because I didn't want to let her ignore me. And just, it was really hard. It was awkward and weird. And it's gotten better now, but it was really difficult. Like my mom, instead of talking to me, she wrote to the world on her blog. She felt like I was betrayed, like I betrayed her or something, or she felt rejected. That's what she said. Mm-hmm. And I actually wrote her an email. I said, Mom, I'm really upset that you wrote this on your blog without talking to me. You know, she's like, you shouldn't be upset. You shouldn't be surprised what I wrote on my blog. And I'm like, I wasn't surprised. She didn't understand that I was upset that she didn't talk to me personally. Like, yeah. I don't know if she's afraid that I'm going to like bring up church stuff. Like I'm like, is your testimony that fragile that you can't talk to me about anything? You know, I don't know. It was so weird.
Yeah. A lot of the time it's just a gut reflex, even though I don't attend church anymore. When something comes up, I don't even think about it. I just instinctively say something. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I don't even think that's true. It's just ingrained in you deep, deep.
And every time, still, it's been like 5 or 6 months, I still, when we sit down to eat, I have an instant inkling to pray, to bless the food. And I was like, oh, like it passes, but it's still like, I think about it every time we sit down to eat as a family. And I'm like, that's weird. Like, yeah. It just doesn't.
Yeah. I still pray at dinner. But
yeah, I don't know. It's kind of weird. The things that get ingrained in your head. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good.
It's been, you said 5 or 6 months since that letter.
Yeah, because it was 24th of July. So it was, okay. Yeah. So, but yeah, it's been better. And I made a project for my mom to kind of, almost as a peace offering. I mean, I was doing it anyway, but I wanted to finish it kind of as a peace offering to give her this book of pictures and stuff. And it was just, it's better now. And we just, it's just kind of a non-subject that they just don't talk about it. But I think it was weird because I do have two brothers that don't. I have one that lives in Colorado and one lives in China. And I just found out apparently my brother in China is an atheist. My husband just told me, I'm like, what? Because you're always thinking, when they leave, like as a teenager, will they still believe in the back of their mind, right? Because no one doesn't believe. Like that's like the weirdest thing. So they do believe, but they just don't want to live the lifestyle, or they just aren't ready for it right now. And they'll come back eventually. Like that's totally what you think. So for me to actually come out and tell my parents I didn't believe was just, and I was the good child. So my whole family was like, "What?" I don't know. It was weird.
It's not fun being the disappointment in the family.
I know. My brother sent me the Book of Mormon challenge. And I was
read it in a certain amount of days? Is that what
it is? No, it was how could anyone have written the Book of Mormon but God or Joseph Smith. It's called the Book of Mormon challenge. Some BYU professor did this Book of Mormon challenge to his students to prove that the Book of Mormon had to be true or whatever. Mm. And I did every question and shot him down everything. But basically, so he hasn't said anything to me since.
Well, that didn't work.
Yeah. He's like, oh, crap. So anyway, yeah, so it was fun.
Do you feel you're agnostic or atheist? Or
you know, disabled? Because my mom died and I actually had, I don't know. I'm probably agnostic, I guess, but I feel like I want to believe in an afterlife because of that. And I had an experience where, it was my first son's blessing and I wasn't even thinking about my mom. And, all of a sudden I had this, like, she was there next to me saying, I'm just here supporting you, saying hi. And then it was gone. It was like this swoop and then out. It was the weirdest experience. So I don't know how to reconcile that if there's not an afterlife. Yeah. Like, cause I wasn't even thinking of her. It wasn't like, I mean, I guess I could have put it in my head, but it was different.
I've had similar experiences and I kind of think, why do we have to define it? Why can't it just be what it is?
It's almost, you know, it's brought my husband and I even closer. And to me, I feel that it's exactly, you don't have to define it. It's something that it's okay to be like, oh, I feel like the end possibilities are endless and that anything is possible. I believe like I'm a massage therapist, so I do a lot of energy work and I've had really good experiences with that. And I always had a hard time reconciling that with my beliefs. And now I'm like, oh, okay, it makes a lot more sense. And so, yeah, I think I believe in some sort of a higher power. I'm not really sure what, but I can't give up my belief of the afterlife, I think, because of, you know, having lost my mom at such a young age. Mm-hmm. So, but it's okay to say, I don't know what I believe. Like, it's not.
Isn't that a freeing feeling?
It is.
To be able to say, I don't know, and it's okay. I don't know.
It's okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. So my son, I think, I'm glad that he was younger because I think he's sometimes confused. Like, he's like, so we don't believe in Jesus? And I was like, no. He's like, well, why? And he always says that we listen to things that tell us not to go to church. I'm like, no, that's not what the podcasts say.
I think that's what my kids think it is too.
And I'm just like, so I'm glad my sister-in-law has older kids, like a son on a mission. Like, so I'm glad there's not that. That would be really hard. So, but he gets confused sometimes. And I just tell him, well, we just believe to be in good people and that, you know, people can believe what they want, but we just believe in being good people and being doing good to others, I guess, following the golden rule. And, you know, you don't have to go to church. Cause he always asks, like, I guess friends, like, well, they said you have to go to church to be good. I'm like, nope, you don't. But I know it's been good, though. I mean, I'm glad that I was always worried about my boys when they came to teenagers because of the whole masturbation thing. And now I'm like, oh, it doesn't even matter. It's totally normal. And I'm so glad that we can teach him that it's okay, and that it's totally normal, and it's a good thing, you know.
And they're not going to have that shame.
Yeah, exactly. We actually have a way more open, like, conversation and talking about everything. Like, we don't lie to each other. We can tell each other anything because there's no shame about anything. So it's
a good feeling.
It is. It is. So, yeah. So it's been awesome.
Well, you've come a long way in a short period of time.
Yeah, I think once I get my mind set on something, I'm kind of done. It doesn't take me long to, once I figure it out, I'm like, okay.
That's nice. Well, thank you, Lindsay.
You're welcome.
I enjoyed it. I feel like we're long lost friends. We're like soulmates.
Yay. Well, thank you for having me. It's been very fun. It is kind of healing telling your story. So I love it.
It is. And if you want to be healed through my power, I'm just kidding. If you want to be on Mormon Expression Voices, please email me at voices@mormonexpression.com. And also, I know that there were several people when I first started Voices that wanted to be interviewed, and I wasn't set up to do it yet through Skype or whatever the reasons were. And I've tried to go through and find those contacts. But if I haven't contacted you, it wasn't because I'm not interested in talking with you. It's just I'm not very organized sometimes. So please, if you still are interested, email me. And if you want to begin an interview, let me know. All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a good day. Bye.
Trying to hold back the